This is Brendan Byrne coming to you live on this crisp and, if not a little bit cool, Monday morning. How's everyone doing out there? I know no one's going to answer. That's a rhetorical question. I am talking on the radio right now, but I am not alone and chattering to myself to the endless existence of the universe. I am joined today with Jen. Jen, how are you doing today?
I'm good. How about yourself?
Pretty good. Jen, why don't you introduce yourself to everyone out there on live stream? Tell them who you are, where you come from, and why you're here today.
Will do. So I'm Jen Paulette Hill. I'm the executive director of HopeWorks. HopeWorks is the local rape crisis and domestic violence center here in Howard County. And I'm just coming to chat, see what's going on, see what kind of questions people have, tell you a little more about HopeWorks, what we do, and what we're about.
Awesome. So, Jen, if I'm not mistaken, it is Sexual Assault Awareness Month. Is that correct?
It is. April.
Yes. I feel like a lot of people don't actually know about that. It's a lot of people I kind of come across and tell that to, they seem really surprised. They don't know. Oh, I didn't know that was going on.
Yeah. Well, sexual assault and sexual violence in general is something that no one really ever wants to talk about. And so, you know, there are awareness months. You have them for all kinds of things. It's also Breast Cancer Awareness Month. So a lot of times breast cancer awareness sort of gets a little higher profile than Sexual Violence Awareness Month. October is Domestic Violence Awareness Month. Just early plug for folks who didn't know that October is Domestic Violence Awareness Month. But it's just really a time for us to put a little extra public profile to something that happens every day and every month.
Yes, very important. And I want to talk more about that. But before we get started, Jen, why don't you tell us a little about yourself? I like to get to know the people behind the organizations that we're coming in to talk to today. So why don't you tell us how maybe you got started with HopeWorks, what you were doing beforehand, what your favorite ice cream is. Just give us some background information on Jen.
All right. Ooh, pressure there. Where do I go? First, let's start with the ice cream because that's really important.
Oh, yeah, of course. That's right. Why we're here today.
And any ice cream. I will eat pretty much any ice cream, only chocolate, only Breyers.
Of course.
Everyone else's chocolate is just subpar.
Very good.
Pretty much any other ice cream, I'm down. I'm always down for ice cream.
I'm a vanilla guy myself, but I'm a pretty bland. Yeah, I'm a pretty bland guy.
Really?
Mm-hmm. Especially soft serve vanilla. I'm a sucker.
We have a famous story in my family of a middle school boyfriend that I had.
Oh, okay.
Right? Who, after school, we would all go to the ice cream store, and it was 31 flavors. It was Baskin-Robbins back when they really actually had 31 flavors.
Oh, okay.
And
can't say I was alive back then.
I know. Anyway, he always got French vanilla. And I'm like, dude, there are 31 flavors. Like, you can mix it up occasionally. And that was just an indicator that it was just not a good
match. I mean, at least he went for the French. That's a little variety, right? That's something.
I don't know. I like a little more, you know, exploration maybe. Oh. A little more spice.
Well, I guess we need to put ourselves out there sometimes.
That's a little important. That's right. But, I mean, vanilla's a classic.
It is.
It's a classic.
And sometimes the classics are the best, you know?
Agreed.
So all ice cream aside, yes. Jen, how did you get started with HopeWorks?
So I'm a social worker by training. And when I started working, it kind of didn't matter what group of population I was working with.
Okay.
You know? So I worked some on a college campus. I worked some at a day treatment program for women who were struggling with substance abuse issues. And sort of everywhere you went where you talked to women who were having issues, there was often trauma at the root of those issues. And particularly folks who had been struggling with substance abuse and alcohol, I mean, 99.9% of those survivors had also experienced some kind of trauma in childhood. And that wasn't what people led with. You know, when they're coming and asking for help with something, you know, they're coming and saying they're depressed, or they're coming and saying their life is unmanageable. And when you start to talk with them and find out what's underneath all of that, it was trauma. And it just started to kind of get under my skin that it's something we don't talk about And yet it's at the root of so much of what people struggle with. And so I always like to do what I'm not told to do. And so working to really elevate that conversation is what drew me to this field. And I've been doing it in Maryland, some in D.C., in various different agencies and organizations, and then came to HopeWorks in early 2012. So I've been there a little over 7 years, and I love it.
Oh, well, that's great.
Yeah.
So you sound like someone who's, for the most part, pretty much know what they've wanted to do from the start. Like, you, would you say that you basically wanted to be a social worker for most of your life?
I did. I did. I think as a kid, I wanted to be a psychiatrist.
Okay.
And then I sort of got a better understanding of what psychiatrists do, mm-hmm. Which a lot of it is sort of diagnosis and medication management, which was not my jam. So social work seemed to be the right direction. And yeah, I kind of always wanted to help people live better lives. Yeah.
Well, that's great. So we actually have a lot of people from HopeWorks on here from time to time. We have some different HopeWorks-based podcasts. But for any new listeners who are on this morning and might not know what HopeWorks is or what the organization is about, would you mind maybe giving us a quick spiel and some background information on what HopeWorks is and what kind of work they do?
Yeah, absolutely. So we are the local Rape Crisis and Domestic Violence Center. So we have all kinds of intervention services that are specific for folks who have experienced intimate partner violence or sexual violence or human trafficking. And so we have counseling services for folks who are looking for that. We have emergency shelter and transitional housing for folks who need a safe place to go while they recoup and figure out their next steps. We've got legal services for folks who need help through the civil or criminal justice system. We have advocates who will meet people at the hospital if they end up in the hospital as a result of some sort of violence that they've experienced. Or if you're just walking in and you something's been going on in your life, you want some help, you don't exactly know what you want, folks will meet with advocacy and they'll sit and talk and figure out what's going on and what kind of services might be a good match.
Okay.
And so that's sort of the overview of our intervention services. Mm-hmm. And then we also have our community engagement department. And that's what the podcast comes out of, Transforming Together, that Heidi and Allison do. And really, that is a broader, more public face of this may or may not be an issue that impacts you, meaning intimate partner violence and sexual violence, but people care. And so we want to engage folks in wellness and healing if you might be a long-term survivor and just get a better knowledge of how do you step in? How do you intervene when there might be concern that you have that someone you love or someone you know might be experiencing these forms of violence? And lots of discussions around how do we change our culture? How do we create a world in which this kind of violence isn't tolerated at all? And so all of our community engagement programs are open to the public, and they are trying to really get at those root causes so that we can hopefully put ourselves out of business and not have to do this anymore.
Ideally, the rare business model, we want to ideally not have to be around.
Exactly. Someday. That is exactly right. Deeply, we wish that. Yeah, deeply.
Well, because unfortunately, people don't like to have this conversation very much, whether they're uncomfortable, if it applies to them, or whether it's a societal norm. People don't really like to discuss it or bring it up. And I heard you mention earlier, when people come in, they just say they're depressed. They're not even maybe consciously aware of what's going on and maybe causing their depression. You have to maybe create the safe space where they'll be willing to come out and discuss that with you.
Well, a lot of times when this kind of trauma happens to someone, it's a very normal coping mechanism for people to just kind of pack it away. And they put one foot in front of the other. They get themselves kind of back on whatever path they've chosen for themselves. And they try and ignore oftentimes what has happened to them. And it's not until later when it doesn't necessarily resolve itself without some language being put to it, without some support being given. It doesn't have to be professional support. Sometimes people have friends and family that are enough support, but sometimes folks don't have those kinds of resources. And so it can be years later that something is still coming up for people. Something is still off. Something's still not right. People might still be having post-traumatic stress disorder symptoms. And so finally they say, you know, I can't keep going on like this. And so it might be the anxiety or the depression that really manifests, and the focus gets put on that symptom. And that's what the help seeking is around, is those symptoms. And it's not until you unpack that a little bit that you get to the bottom of sort of what's causing those symptoms in the first place.
Yeah. And maybe facilitating that unpacking is where Hope Works kind of can come in.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. And we really take our cue from folks who are walking in our door, because everybody unpacks differently. You know, sometimes it's a traditional kind of talk therapy, therapeutic setting that folks might experience in any kind of counseling situation. Sometimes it's more art-based, that folks want to come in and do poetry or different art modalities that we offer, and that's a way to give voice to what happened. Sometimes it's more somatic. It might be movement. It might be things that take you, ground you more into your body. And everybody approaches healing differently. So we try and give folks lots of options and take our cue from them about what really mm-hmm. is going to work best.
So there's a multitude of ways to kind of really connect with people and help them through their trauma. That sounds like for someone who works at Hope Works, it takes a lot of training and just really a lot of work to get them ready to be able to work with people like that.
It does. Mm-hmm. It does. We do have very specialized training for our staff. And the more you work with trauma, the more you see how it operates in folks. And everybody's experience certainly is unique to them, but there are sort of telltale signs of how trauma manifests for folks. And a lot of times, sort of general therapists don't get that kind of training. I know when I went through social work school, there was no specific training for trauma-based care. There is a lot more research these days. There is a lot more emphasis on trauma-informed care, and that's a great thing. But that's what we specialize in.
That's very good. It's great to have an organization like Hope Works out there where we can talk about and have that discussion about events like, for instance, Sexual Assault Awareness Month.
Absolutely.
As we mentioned earlier.
Absolutely.
So how long, I guess, has April been Sexual Assault Awareness Month?
Ooh, that's history I don't have.
History I don't have, yeah.
It's history I don't have, but I can tell you it comes from Take Back the Night events.
Okay.
That really, I'm going to guess... educated guess here, that was really 70s, where first Take Back the Night events were happening on college campuses. And that was, there is such a high rate of sexual assault in particular linked to college campuses. Some of it is the age range, because 18 to 24 is the highest age range for folks to have experienced a sexual assault. And so that, of course, is key college population. And oftentimes college campuses have alcohol factors that make interactions more complicated to negotiate and might end up in a sexual assault situation. And so I believe in the 70s, folks started to want to publicly give voice to what was happening so commonly on college campuses, and wanting to kind of stake the claim that women deserve to be safe. Now, there's a little bit of misnomer, I think, where it came from, because originally Take Back the Night events was the idea of sort of taking back the streets,
yeah.
You know, walking at night, feeling safe at night. And we see campuses install things like blue light phones so that folks can call for help if they are approached in some way. And that's important. It's not that that's not important, but it is a little confusing, because that's not actually how we see most sexual assault occur.
Yeah.
Most sexual assault is between folks that know each other, and that there's some level of trust that then gets violated.
Mm-hmm.
And so, not that sexual assault by a stranger doesn't happen. It absolutely happens. But we've evolved to understand that that's not the majority of sexual violence that people experience.
It'll happen from someone maybe in a close proximity to. It's not always there's someone waiting in the alley in a hood.
Absolutely.
Behind the dumpster, just waiting for you to come out. None of that, not to say that it doesn't happen.
Yeah.
But it's just kind of it's a myth that's perpetuated more so by media and television and movies that we kind of see a lot.
Yeah.
No one really talks about the how people will abuse intimacy to kind of make that assault a reality.
Absolutely. And I think part of that is a bit of a self-defense mechanism. You know, if you think it's a stranger, there's all kinds of sort of safety mechanisms that you can take to, quote, protect yourself and keep sort of that stranger danger mentality. And it's harder to talk about how might you protect yourself from someone you love.
Yeah.
That's a difficult conversation to have. We all think that that's just not ever going to happen, that our trust gets violated in that way. And so we're kind of not having the right conversation.
Yeah. No one, I mean, fortunately we've evolved to the point where people are discussing, you know, at least having the conversation. I know years ago, the conversation wasn't really even being had. No one wanted to hear it. You know, no one's like, that doesn't happen. Well, that's too bad. We don't want to talk about it.
Yeah.
That's not my problem. We're not going to hear it.
Yeah.
But, you know, people are at least, trying to make the effort and trying to start that campaign and have that conversation and make people realize this is a problem and it does affect you.
Yes.
It affects all of us. It affects everyone.
It does. Because even if it hasn't impacted you directly, and I would actually challenge that a little bit because particularly for women, we look at sexual violence as a wide range of behaviors. You know, something that might go from catcalls to sexual harassment to full rape. Most women have experienced some level of that range at some point in their lives, if not multiple things, you know, in that span. And when that happens, and this happens to men too, it happens at higher rates than we think. Men don't report as much as women do, but they certainly are not, it's not just women who are experiencing these kinds of abuse. And so we, I lost my train of thought there, right in the middle of it all.
That's okay. We'll find that train as it passes by again. We'll catch another train.
Awesome.
There are multiple departures here today.
There's always a train coming.
Yes.
Yeah.
But I understand what you're saying. Just in my experience, just with all my female friends, I was always astonished when they would say, yeah, we've all experienced, like, have you all had this happen? Like, yeah, absolutely. We've all been catcalled. We've all had a more commonplace one nowadays, receiving a dick pic or an unsolicited sexual picture from Snapchat.
Yeah, no, thank you.
All really gross.
Yeah, no, thank you.
Not really flattering.
No.
and yeah, I mean, you're absolutely right. It does, that kind of behavior can happen to men too, but there's not, the tendency isn't as much that it will happen to men. It's not as commonplace for men to worry about receiving that kind of picture, that kind of media from women.
Yep.
I've never had that happen.
Yep.
But
yep.
Pretty much every one of my female friends has had that happen to them in spades.
Yes.
They can all recall specific people. Like, oh, yeah. Remember Brian from Calculus? Yeah, yeah, he sent me several. Or my brother-in-law sent me that after we got divorced. Or just any, like, just weird, arbitrary background people that you didn't think would kind of possess that kind of capacity for behavior can do it very casually. And it's really gross.
It's really gross. Mm. And I think the commonality is really shocking. And it's interesting. I find that the more we talk about how common it is, and we've seen a lot of light given to that with the Me Too movement, which has been incredible and fantastic. But it's a danger, I think, that we just accept that, yeah, this is the air we're breathing. This is the water that we're swimming in.
Yeah.
And it is currently the air we're breathing and the water that we're swimming in. It's everywhere at all kinds of invasive levels, from low threshold to, you know, awful thresholds.
Yeah.
And the first step is naming it and identifying it. And I think we're doing a much better job of naming it and identifying how pervasive it is. But we can't stop there. We can't just say, yeah, it happens to my friends in spades, right? Mm-hmm. It's true, and that has to be said for folks to understand what we're really, the volume that we're really talking about. And we have to keep pushing. We have to keep saying, okay, so there's things you can do for an individual person who's experienced that. And some of that is a great referral to Hope Works to come and give us the opportunity to help someone through that healing process. But we have to do more than just help the individual people. That's important. We're always going to do that. That's really the core of who we are. But we have to have these more important conversations as a community about why is it okay that weirdo from, you know, chemistry sends me this. And what can you say to that person?
Yeah.
Like, what are men's roles to say to other men? Dude, don't send the dick pic.
Mm-hmm.
How do you have those conversations about what is consensual in a relationship and not consensual in a relationship? What you're willing to do tonight, but maybe or not, that's not free reign on the table all the time. Those are how you have to have those intimate conversations to make sure that what is happening is something that everyone's agreed to.
Yeah. And unfortunately, it can be hard. Some people just don't want to hear it. I remember when the, I think it was the Gillette campaign talked about how, men be real men. I saw so many people freak out over just, it's a stupid razor commercial, you know, for goodness sakes. Like people are having such a strong reaction to like, hey, maybe don't, you know, be, you know, a jerk and assault people. It's like, whoa, come on, Gillette. It's like, what do you mean? It's just a commercial. Like, calm down.
Right. Well, it's interesting. So much, particularly when you're talking about sexual assault, the emphasis gets placed on women.
Yes.
Which is true in terms of who the majority of survivors are or who the target of the violence is.
Mm-hmm.
Is women for the most part. Not exclusively, but for the majority. But there's a second half there. It is usually men who are the offenders in those situations. And it is not all men.
Yeah.
It is not all men by any stretch of the imagination.
Yeah.
You typically have some men who are repeat offenders and kind of give other men a really bad rap.
Mm-hmm.
And so you can't just, this is a combination here of men and women and our relationships with each other. And we can't talk about women and how women can be empowered and how women should have all the options open to them in the world, which of course I agree with, and not talk about men and how men should be and how men might have to give up some power for women to share it.
Mm-hmm.
And so we're not as good as having the second half of the conversation.
Yeah. Because if people think they have something to lose from it, they'll be like, well, let's get out of it here. I mean, the biggest thing I've seen that one of the biggest fights in the conversation is victim blaming.
Yep.
You know, people talk about that. It was like, well, why did you wear that? Why did you say that? They treat victims like they're handling a wild animal. You know, like if
Absolutely.
You poke the bear is going to attack you. So why'd you poke the bear? It's
Absolutely.
Like, well, you know, we're not wild animals. We're human beings. You know, we can reason, we can learn, we can evolve. And maybe we should act like it and have a conversation like it. And that maybe if you change that idea, the foundation, when you're raising the next generation of men, maybe that won't happen anymore.
Yeah,
maybe
absolutely.
We can grow beyond that.
Yeah. But, yeah, I have two boys. I have two boys who are 12 and almost 15. And I never thought that I'd have boys. I don't know why. I thought that I would have girls. Like, that's my wheelhouse. But I call it my universal balance, you know, that I work all day mostly with women. And then at home, it's all men all the time. And it's conversations that we've had since the very beginning, since they were very little and we're talking about what body parts are and what real names for body parts are and that there's nothing dirty about genitals. They're part of your body, just like your elbow. And, you know, starting with those kinds of conversations to normalize sexuality, to normalize conversation just in and of itself, that you can talk about these things and mm-hmm. not feel awkward or embarrassed. And that's the start of how I'm trying my best to raise some feminist boys so that they can show that manhood is being respectful, equal partners.
Yeah. And a lot of it, the misconception is that, I don't know, it's just when people hear feminism or people don't understand it, they kind of hear, oh, so you want it all Mad Max dominated society dominated completely by women. It's like, well, no, this affects you too, guys. Like, it's really just about equality. It's about everyone being in a shared space where they are on the same plane.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And just as, you know, women have been historically curtailed and still curtailed in many ways, men also have been curtailed. I mean, there isn't the power loss that women experience, mm-hmm. but men have been put in a box where you aren't allowed to have a full range of emotion.
Yes.
You're not allowed to express certain inner feelings. You're not allowed to wear certain things or do certain professions without your sexuality or your manhood being questioned. And that hurts men too.
Yeah, and a lot of people, or a lot of men particularly, let's be real, don't realize that as much. They don't understand how they're affected. It's like, you know, there will be a lot of relief and good change for the better for you too if you kind of help get on board with this.
Yeah.
You know? And that's why it's important to have the conversation. It's not just something that happens with Sexual Assault Awareness Month, but it's something that happens every day.
Absolutely.
And I know that your organization is trying to make more commonplace. So I know that there's some campaigns going around. Like one I found out about recently is Wear Denim to show your support for survivors, was it?
I don't know.
Because I saw that it was trending on Twitter a few days ago.
And I have to admit, I'm not a Twitter follower. I had been a Twitter follower, and there were some events that happened that made me decide to get off Twitter.
Yeah. Yeah. Understandably.
Yes.
Yeah. It can be social media. It can be a double-edged sword.
It can be. It yes. can be, indeed.
So I guess what I'm asking is how does April work differently for HopeWorks? Like, do you have special events that kind of promote the conversation or any community or local events that you guys try to put on to maybe open that discussion?
Honestly, we don't do a whole lot more in terms of events than we do all year round.
Okay.
We do a little more social media around it being Sexual Assault Awareness Month, just to leverage that there is a national conversation where there's a little more attention in April. But we really are working hard to be sure that there are ways for people to plug in every month of the year. And so we haven't had, you know, a rally or an event that's specific to Sexual Assault Awareness Month. We've had lots of events, but they're pretty much sort of what we do every month of the year.
And that's good. And I mean, that's yeah. how, you know, it should be, kind of start that conversation and live that message every day.
Yeah.
As it should be. So I guess my next question is really, what would you say to someone who's trying to figure out how to take that first step and maybe reach out to someone like HopeWorks to kind of have that conversation? Someone who's been personally affected by it and doesn't know what to do.
Yes. Well, first I would say you are not alone, and help is always available whenever that person is ready. So it could be today, it could be tomorrow, it could be a year from now, and to go at your own pace and just give us a call. Just give us a call. Or walk in. You can come to our office. It was not very far away. And someone will sit down with you and see what's happening and tell you all about what's available. And so it is just that initial step that's hard, to call or to come in or even check us out on Facebook and send us a message. And we will respond.
So before we go, what is the contact information for HopeWorks? Do you guys you say you have a Facebook page. What's your website?
Our website is wearehopeworks.org. So that's we are HopeWorks with an S.org. And so folks can definitely check us out on there, and they'll see all the links to our Facebook and Twitter and all of that contact information. Our phone number is 410-997-0304, and folks can call anytime.
All right. Excellent. Jen, thank you so much for talking with me today.
Thank you.
It's great to get this message out. We're going to throw you back to some music now, guys. We will see you all tomorrow. Enjoy the nice weather. I know it's a little chilly today. And we'll talk to you guys later.
Connect with us. We are Dragon Digital Radio.